Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. Juno is inviting developers, nonprofits, and tribal governments to apply for grants or loans from its Affordable Housing Fund. The city created the fund 5 years ago to address the city's lack of housing, specifically low- and middle-income rentals. There are $2.5 million available in the fund this year. The application period opened last week and runs through August 22nd. Joseph Myers is the city's housing and land use specialist.
Things are getting more challenging with the landscape for housing on the federal level. And so I'm really hopeful that we get a lot of people applying for these funds and, you know, get more units on the ground.
The city then uses criteria like proximity to public transportation and long-term affordability to decide which projects get funding and how much. The city has awarded nearly $13 million in grants or loans from the fund since its establishment. But not all projects funded in the past have been required to offer affordable units. In 2022, the Juneau Assembly approved a $1.2 million loan from the fund for a development called Ridgeview. The Assembly initially approved the loan for the project with an affordability requirement, but later stripped those requirements after input from city leadership. Last year, the developer listed the units as condos available for purchase at market price, to the dismay of many residents. Some testified at public meetings and others posted hundreds of comments online. Myers says since then, the assembly has required affordability for projects approved to receive funding.
If the application doesn't meet that requirement, they'd have to go back to the drawing board. And so we really do want to focus on providing some affordability, at least, with all of these projects.
The application period closes on August 22nd. Then a committee will review them and make recommendations to the Assembly for final approval. Two black bear cubs were electrocuted to death after climbing a utility pole in downtown Juneau, temporarily knocking out power in part of a neighborhood Monday night. Juneau residents have seen the family, three cubs and a mother bear, wandering downtown in recent weeks. Tara Thornton witnessed the incident on West 12th Street at around 11 p.m. She heard people hollering and saw a car turn around in her driveway, so she went outside and saw that a bear had made a mess of the trash. As she and her husband cleaned up, they heard a zap.
Moments later, we see a bear cub fall from the top of the telephone pole.
She says it fell into a car and died. Thornton says people gathered around to see what was happening, and that didn't help the situation. She and her neighbors tried to direct traffic away from the scene so another cub would feel safe to climb down. Meanwhile, she says the sow was pacing and trying to carry both her dead cub and its wailing sibling away from the crowd. Roy Churchwell is the management coordinator at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Southeast. He and a colleague arrived at the scene after the first cub died and managed the onlookers.
We'd asked them to go into their houses and kind of quiet things down, and that was happening.
He says that in situations like this, the best way to protect bears is to give them space. But then the cub that was still up on the utility pole hit the transformer. The electric shock killed it instantly and knocked out power in parts of the flats neighborhood. Churchwell says it sounded like a gun went off. Thornton, the neighbor, says this could have been prevented. Now she wants to see metal sleeves or other barriers go up on the utility poles in town to keep bears from climbing to their deaths. Churchwell says a third cub survived the ordeal and appeared uninjured with its mother when he was called to respond to the sow chasing someone in the Evergreen Cemetery this morning. And the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development is appealing a federal decision that could cost the state $80 million and potentially undermine equitable funding among Alaska schools. Federal Impact Aid is at the center of a dispute between the state and federal government. It's money that makes up for lost revenue from land that can't be taxed, like federal, military, or Alaska Native-owned land. The state can normally use a portion of that money as part of its contribution to school districts, as long as it can prove it's funding education equitably. That's done through a disparity test. The state failed that test earlier this year because the U.S. Department of Education rejected the state's attempt to exclude funding that districts set aside for transportation from the test calculations. That means the state can't use $80 million in federal impact aid to offset part of its obligation to school districts. But it's appealing that decision. In its appeal, the state argues that the federal government was wrong to count transportation funding in its test calculations. The state also asked to retake the test if the appeal fails. One of the attorneys representing Deed in the appeal said in an email that it's difficult to tell how long the case will take this early in the process and cannot comment on, quote, potential outcomes of the pending appeal at this point. The federal department said in an email it will review information from the state and hopes to resolve the issue. Financially, there are a few ways the appeal could play out. The simplest is if the appeal is successful. In that case, the state could continue to use federal dollars as part of its contribution to school districts. But if the appeal fails, things get more complicated. Districts that qualify for impact aid would still receive that money on top of what they get from the state, and the state would need to make up for an $80 million gap in its funding. Alexei Painter is the director of the state's Legislative Finance Division. Part of his role is to understand how the decision would affect the state's budget.
If we fail the disparity test under the legislature's budget, the state cost would go up by $80 million, and then those districts would also get that $80 million. So essentially, districts as a whole would get about $80 million more.
But some districts would get less, he said. Here's why. Painter says the legislature sets aside an open-ended amount of money for education funding. It's basically however much is needed to meet the state's statutory obligation to districts. He says in this case, districts get whatever the states owe them, plus the federal funds. But Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed more than $50 million in education funding. If state legislators uphold the veto, Painter says that changes education funding from something open-ended to a fixed amount of money. The state would still need to make up the $80 million, but it would have to do so by cutting education funding across the board.
There's only a fixed pot of money. Raising the amount the state owes by $80 million means that all districts will essentially see their amount of aid reduced.
The Finance Division estimates the state would have to reduce funding equal to an additional $319 cut to the state's per-student allocation. That doesn't mean that all districts would lose money. The division's estimates show some districts like the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District and Bering Strait School District would receive enough federal impact aid that they receive more money overall, up to millions of dollars more. Other districts like Anchorage and Kodiak would receive some impact aid, but it isn't enough to offset the reduced state funding. And for the 15 districts that don't receive any impact aid, it would mean less state funding with no federal funds to fall back on. The Juneau School District is one of those districts. It could lose more than $2.5 million without any federal funding to make up for the loss. Juneau School District Superintendent Frank Hauser says it's hard to figure out how things will shape up.
I hesitate to even speculate. You know, it's so difficult to even try to speculate as we're going through and trying to figure out what could happen because none of these situations are good situations for the students.
He says he's more concerned about other funding uncertainties that have cropped up in recent months. On top of Dunleavy's education funding veto, DEED is proposing a regulation change that would further limit local contributions from municipalities to school districts. On the federal side, the U.S. Department of Education blocked millions in grants for migrant education, English language learners, and more to the state. Hauser says the district could lose more than $8 million from those actions. But we're not there yet. The appeal process still has to play out, and the state has been successful in a similar appeal before. It successfully appealed a failed test in 2022. But at that time, Painter said the state didn't find out until the end of the fiscal year. He said a similar timeline and a failed result could make things difficult for the state and districts. For example, states that receive more money may not have enough time to spend it and may have more money in savings than state law allows. In the meantime, he says the state is distributing funds as if it hasn't failed the test. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep. And a coalition of schools and advocacy groups, including the Anchorage School District, is suing the Trump administration over its decision to withhold some $6.8 billion in federal education funds approved by Congress. The plaintiffs, which also include the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the Kuspik School District in Western Alaska, say the funding freeze violates federal law and the separation of powers. The funding approved by Congress is meant to support teacher training, migrant education, English language learning, and academic enrichment. Alaska schools received $47 million for those programs last year. The Trump administration's Office of Management and Budget says it's withholding the funds pending a review. The lawsuit says that's illegal. Kuspik School District Superintendent Madeline Aguilard says her district relies heavily on federal funds. She says she'd already signed contracts to send students to remote areas for a summer program studying salmon populations when the news of the freeze came down. And now she's not sure how she'll fill the gap.
Some of these programs are honestly the cornerstone of what we offer, what we can offer, and what we have historically offered. And now we're talking about literally removing those cornerstones.
An Anchorage School District spokesperson said the freeze had caused, quote, significant disruption to our core mission of educating all students for success in life. He said the frozen funds bolstered early literacy programs, teacher training, and mental health services. He said they also supported students whose family work in logging, agriculture, and fishing. The plaintiffs are asking a Rhode Island federal judge to order the Trump administration to distribute the funding. 10 Republican senators, including Senator Lisa Murkowski, sent a letter to the administration last week urging the administration to release the money. The Trump administration said it would unfreeze some of the funds meant for after-school programs, but districts say they're still waiting for the money to arrive. And 30 Alaskans started medical classes in Anchorage this week in the biggest cohort to date for the state's only med school program. Alaska Whammy is a partnership between the University of Alaska Anchorage and University of Washington School of Medicine. Dr. Kathy Young is a physician and assistant dean for the program. She says they recruit and support students from rural and remote parts of Alaska.
So they understand what it's like to practice in Alaska. I don't know that there's anywhere else that has such a population that is off-road and rural in comparison to other states.
Whammy aims to increase the number of physicians practicing in rural and underserved areas. The program also serves four other states: Washington, Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho. Alaska Whammy started in 1971 with 9 students. Young says now about 12% of Alaska's physicians are program graduates. Students study for 2 to 4 years in Alaska, then continue to medical residency, either in or out of state. She says physicians in Alaska typically practice a wider range of medicine than in other states, and she says studying medicine in-state allows doctors to deeply understand how Alaska's geography factors into care.
It's very expensive to medevac. It's also, people tend to do better when they're in their own home, but you have to get the timing right and you have to get the resources matched. And I think that is something you really only learn by seeing within Alaska.
The program has weathered budget cuts and uncertainty, but Young says state funds helped expand the program starting in 2023. This is KTOO.